Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to Engage for Success Radio show number 518, Ground Up, Elevating Employee Voice for Continuous Improvement. Today we're going to be talking about how ground up communication differs from traditional top down approaches and what unique advantages it offers in a workplace setting. I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm an engagement consultant working within the Engage for Success core team. The Engage for Success movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there is a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. We spread the word about employee engagement and shine a light on good practice, inspiring people and workplaces to thrive. And we're widely supported across the UK, involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engagesuccess.org, you can use the link at the bottom of the page to join our newsletter list, and all our social media links are there too. My guest today is Paul Reed, who's founder and CEO at Trickle. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jo. Very pleased to be here.
Lovely. So start by telling us a bit about you and what you do and who Trickle are.
Okay. So my name's Paul. I'm the founder of a tech startup based up in Scotland called Trickle. We originally started in the employee engagement theme, but we kind of combined two things. We are all about continuous improvement, so helping organisations understand what they need to focus on to improve, and the data that they get is based on what people think matters most. So it's kind of combining engagement and continuous improvement. In terms of my background, I started off as a software engineer when I graduated back in 1995, when I still had a lot of hair. And I then became a CTO, and then I became a CEO in about 2007. So I've had kind of a career largely in businesses that I've started myself, and covering both kind of tech and commercial.
Lovely. So that's a bit of a change going from software and engineering and so on into employee engagement.
Indeed, yes. So I learned a few lessons along the way. So shall I tell you the story? It'll take a couple of minutes. But yeah, so first job out of university, I think I was employee number 4 in this tech startup, and we worked from the founder's house. And I remember going for my interview amongst the Fisher-Price toys and things lying around in the house. And it started off as a negative experience, actually, because there was not really any support, right? The founders were really like smart people. It was a husband and wife team, and they were working in the area of mobile mapping. So they were doing a kind of map-based product for the Ordnance Survey back in those days. And good at what they did, but they didn't really have any experience in growing a business. So, you know, not a lot of support for people. We were working from dining room table and chairs. You know, it wasn't kind of office furniture and all that kind of stuff that you might expect nowadays as an employee. So there was quite a few teething problems. And as the company started to grow, we ended up with about, I don't know, let's say we had 20 people after a year. It grew quite fast. And people started moaning all the time at lunchtime, you know. It was like, oh, this is a pain in the backside, and why do we do this and not that? And I thought to myself, this is, one, it's frustrating, right, because I wasn't enjoying it. But two, it's a bit stupid that everyone's feeling the same way and we're not really talking about it. So I was thinking about leaving, and I thought to myself, well, why don't I just tell them what's going on? So I created a kind of anonymous document after speaking to everyone and getting the kind of top 2 or 3 things that were on their mind. And I just scored it, right, really simply. You know, for every person that felt this issue was a challenge, then it got an additional score. And I kind of sorted it into a top 20. And I remember it was called companyissues.doc. And I put it on a floppy disk. And I left it on the managing director's desk. It wasn't anonymous for me, right? So I left a post-it on it saying, right, you know, hey, I won't say the person's name. You might want to look at this. Yeah. And then the next day I got a phone call. Hey, Paul, would you like to come out to lunch with myself and a couple of the directors? And I was thinking to myself, oh, what? I wasn't really expecting that. So anyway, long story short, it was a pleasant surprise. They thanked me for, you know, making them aware of what was going on, because it wasn't like a kind of document full of gripes, right? It was, here's 20 things that we think we'd like to tackle, ordered by importance. And they kind of said, look, it's really helpful for us to know this, and a lot of these things we can actually fix. And they asked me if I would kind of stick around and just help them engage around that. So it was a really early lesson in the power of one speaking up, because I was always quite quiet, you know, at school when I learned that, you know, my first job, that speaking up was really positive. And then the second thing was, if you can have an environment where you can show that you want to improve, then it really helps people with a sense of belonging, you know, because, for example, I was going to leave. And then when I saw that they wanted to tackle these things, I thought, well, let's give it a shot. And I actually ended up staying for about another 2 or 3 years. So I then started my own business, which wasn't anything to do with, again, employee engagement. But because of that lesson, we were able to build in very early doors, you know, a system where let's listen to people and let's make sure that we're continually tackling the things that people feel are important, you know. And that journey was a 15-year journey, which ultimately led to acquisition by an organization of 70,000 employees. And we learned then that, you know, it's very, very hard to speak up and be heard in an organization of that size. And that was really why we, I kind of left that business and then started Trickle as a platform to really try and simulate that in a, using technology. You know, how can we help people to speak up using a technology platform?
Yes, yeah. Well, that's a really powerful story. I mean, there's so much sort of discussion about how important storytelling is nowadays, isn't it? And that, you know, and I don't know, you were 4 minutes telling that story or whatever, really highlights exactly the importance of what we're talking about today. So thank you for sharing it. But also, well done you for doing that. Like you say, most people just moan and leave. Or what is it they do? They quiet quit now. They don't leave.
Quiet quit, yeah. Well, the thing is, I've never really been one for the status quo. And I think that, I guess being a software engineer, I was quite lucky because I did a lot of my software time when the world was changing from what they used to call the waterfall approach to software development, where you'd start on day one and you'd find out what the customer needs. And then, you know, 2 years later, you'd deliver this big system. And then the customer would be like, well, it kind of doesn't really do what I need because the needs have evolved so much, right?
Yeah.
So there was a movement in software called Agile, and a lot of kind of platforms and different frameworks to help people be more agile in the way they delivered software. And it totally transformed the industry. You know, it went from multi-million project failures to, you know, small, quick projects that deliver value. And so there was a lot of learning from that. And what I thought was, well, actually, there's no reason that that shouldn't apply to just everyday business.
Yeah.
And really, that was what we tried to build in through the organizations that I founded, you know, was to make sure that we were always tackling the things that were most important, you know, week by week. What are the five things? Boom, let's do them. Right. And what's the next five, you know? And that's really what the kind of core to Trickle is, really, is let's engage on the things that matter most. But let's do it in a way where, it, you know, the employees get a chance to contribute and to set the agenda.
Yes, yeah. And I love the fact that you're sort of combining the voice with continuous improvement. I worked for an organisation years ago where the focus was on the Japanese concept of Kaizen, and all about individuals coming together in every area of the business to make small incremental improvements all the time. You know, to improve the business, and it was so motivational to see that happening, and also just to see that improvement happening all the time. So love that you've connected the two. And I think also when organizations are doing employee surveys, the gap is often doing something with the information. So they get the information and then don't often deal with it effectively, or if they do, they don't involve the employees in it, so it doesn't really land or work afterwards either. So this all sounds very positive to me. So tell me a bit more about your thoughts about sort of the ground up approach and how important that is in terms of the continuous improvement within organizations.
Yeah, I think it's key, because if you think about a survey, right, and, you know, we're very familiar with organizations that run surveys, and, you know, we're definitely not anti-survey. I mean, a lot of the time Trickle works alongside an annual survey, you know, they're very complementary. But what we find is that, you know, a survey is obviously top down. It's got an agenda behind it. You know, it's got a set of things that leaders typically want to understand. And often it's the same questions that, you know, that are asked year after year. And there's a couple of things about that, right? Number one is, how do you know you're asking the right questions? And number two, why should what matters to the organization and the leaders of the organization be any more important than what happens and what matters to the employees? You know, I feel it's all about balance. And I think that surveys don't have that balance, essentially.
Yeah.
And that was something that we set out to try and correct, you know.
So tell me how it works, what you actually do. Like you said, you often run alongside surveys with what you're doing. So how does it work? If I'm an organization and I want to find out what my employees are thinking and what improvements they want and all that sort of stuff, how do you go about that?
Okay, sure. So the main idea is that the platform will show you in real time the top five matters. Okay, so we call them trickles. The idea being that you address things when they're small before they become bigger challenges, right? So things kind of trickle their way through the organization. So you create a trickle, it goes into the feed. Your colleagues see that in the feed, just like they would review Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. And they then decide whether that matters to them and how much it matters to them. And they can contribute their thoughts and their suggestions to that topic. So you end up with all these individual trickles within the platform, each one about a certain topic or a certain suggestion or a certain concern, and then a whole load of threaded discussion and emoji reactions. And what that allows us to do is to set a score on each of the trickles, and then the platform automatically prioritizes based on that score. So what we do is we have a dashboard called the top five, and we encourage leaders, which we call champions within the platform, to meet and review that top five at least every 2 weeks. And the system then becomes about, okay, here's the top five things. Let's take them one by one. Let's at least engage, because there's no reason you can't engage on each of these topics. And then where possible, let's progress them in some way. So it might be, you know, number one, right? Okay, what's the topic? Joe, can you take this? Great. Everyone gets to see that Joe is looking after this as a champion and what the next step is. Number two, Paul, can you take this? Great. Number three, we can't do anything about this because... And you just go through that process, you know, very, very quickly, spending, you know, 15 minutes or so going through that top five every couple of weeks. And in every trickle, it has a four-stage workflow. So it starts from being raised, it then might get championed if it reaches enough interest. At some point, it will reach a conclusion. And then the final stage is it goes out to vote. And the vote is simply to say, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, what did you feel on the outcome that was reached following this debate and the conclusion that was reached? And what happens then is that your top five continually evolves because, you know, maybe items number one and number three get completed, new things enter the top five, and you become very agile as you start to tackle these things, but also very inclusive because people are continually contributing their suggestions. And when they do so, they can be optionally anonymous, which we find is a real kind of secret to making sure that you're truly getting the truth from what people think is important.
Mm-hmm. And what does impact does this have on the culture and how people feel about working for the organisation?
So the major impact it has is people seeing solutions in real time. So we usually encourage at least a minimum of a month, right, to get the process bedded in. And that cycle of kind of reviewing the top five and then posting updates, if we can get through a couple of cycles in the first month, what people start to see is that things are progressing. And they can see that change in real time. So if you think about a survey, and you referred to this earlier on yourself, a survey is about capturing some information, then some administration, some analysis is done, and then you get a whole load of, you know, outcomes, potentially these things we need to focus on. Okay. Whereas in trickle, every conversation is tracked through to a conclusion. So the action, the next step, the engagement all happens per topic. So people can subscribe to the topics that matter to them. They're then automatically kept in the loop. And when they start to see progress, it builds a cycle of, oh, look, this was raised. It's potentially a little bit provocative or a little bit controversial, but it was dealt with and we've now reached a conclusion that everyone can see. So I think that transparency, that agility, and the fact that really anyone can get involved, right? There's no barrier to entry because you can be optionally anonymous when you raise a suggestion or when you comment on someone else's suggestion. And we just find that it creates a really open environment where people appreciate the opportunity to speak out, you know, and to see progress.
So where does the sort of accountability for making the things happen come from? Because I mean, you talked about there being a process. I'm interested a bit more in that, because often you can end up where everything gets sort of thrown to the senior people to deal with, and then it still doesn't get dealt with. You know, you have the same issues coming up time and again, and you've already said, you know, if there are issues that can't be dealt with, then you say they can't be dealt with and move on, sort of thing. But what's to stop it just sort of becoming something that people keep talking about, but it still doesn't get resolved? What's that process in a bit?
Yeah, so there's a number of things there, right? The first thing is that when you post a topic, you choose whether it's a topic, like let's say I'm posting a suggestion. So is it a suggestion that impacts my team? Is it a suggestion that impacts the location I work in, which might be a particular, it might be Edinburgh versus Glasgow, or it might be a particular hospital, for example, in the NHS. Or is it something that impacts the entire community? Now, the community might be, 1,000 junior doctors on a health board, or it might be all 500 employees of a accountancy firm, for example. So you choose what the audience is when you post, and what that means is that accountability then can be localized, because if you're a team lead, right, you can look at the top five just for your team. And usually most organizations are having frequent meetings all over the organization, so individual teams will have a weekly team meeting, for example. Individual projects might have a monthly team meeting, and the exec might have a quarterly board meeting. So each team, for example, can look at their own top five and address that, whereas each project can look at the top five for the project and address that. So it really helps the responsibility be spread throughout the organization. So it's not just about agility, but it's also about a kind of a culture of shared responsibility. And that's really the challenge, right? Is exactly as you described. If you look at the kind of traditional pyramid hierarchy of an organization, which most organizations still use and most of our customers still use, things have to often be cascaded from the flat of the pyramid, along the bottom, up to the top to get approval, and then come back down in the form of action. And this is all about doing things locally, So if we know as a team that the top five things are these things, then what can we do about them right now? We don't need to speak to anyone else about that. And, we might need to speak to someone about one or two of them because they need budget, or, they need approval beyond what the team has. But there's often things that can be tackled locally. And it's really about that, instilling this kind of behavior where it's like, right, here's the challenges, here's the suggestions. What can we do today to make tomorrow better?
So have you got some specific examples of where your clients have made those changes, that they've done things that they wouldn't have ordinarily done without the trickle process?
Yeah, sure. So most of our customers are in healthcare at the moment. So the NHS is our biggest market. So a couple of NHS examples would be, well, my favourite one is actually what I would term as employee-led innovation. So, a suggestion, an idea that ended up in a greater efficiency across the organisation. So an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound scan of the heart, in one of the hospitals and one of our customers, one of the junior doctors said, look, when I organise a scan, the scan gets performed, and then it can take up to 30 minutes to get the result. And I find this really frustrating. And then when I get notified that the result's available, I have to go in the basement, queue, come back up, and all this time I'm away from the patient. So that was raised. It reached the top five. It was reviewed in their two-weekly cycle. And they realised actually this is impacting, quite a number of people within the community of 1,000 junior doctors. And it's a bit silly that we've not really talked about it before. So it took them about 7 weeks of discussion, what workarounds could we create, and they eventually created an outcome, which I understand they didn't spend any additional budget on, and it was just really a new process, a revised process, and they got it down to like instant. So it went from 30 minutes on average down to, hey, here's the results right now. And for me, that's a great example of, number one, the people who then perform that process are far less frustrated. But number two, the additional benefits to that organization in terms of, patient experience and, greater value in terms of the doctors spending their time actually with patients, as opposed to waiting around or walking around waiting for results, or picking up results. So that's one of my favorites. It can be simple things like, hey, I'm a junior doctor in year two, and I'm finding this really frustrating. It's stressful. I'm not really enjoying it, and I'm thinking about leaving. And then somebody else comes in and says, well, I'm a junior doctor in year three, and I felt exactly the same. But here's what changes, and here's what improves. And I recommend you stick it out, a lot of peer support. Another one that I enjoyed was within a university setting, which was someone said, it really frustrates me when people are talking during lectures. And one of the leaders, one of the lecturers in that organization said that they loved that one because they didn't have to do a single thing about it. Just the fact that it went to number one and people saw that it made it to number one, everyone was then embarrassed into not talking anymore in the class. So yeah, it's things like that. You wouldn't know about a lot of these things through a survey, right? Because you wouldn't know to ask the right question.
No.
Another healthcare one, just a really quick one, was somebody said, why are there never any extra small scrubs in the operating theatre? As a small lady, this is very difficult for me. And again, that was one that impacted a load of people, and they'd never really kind of addressed it before, you know, which is so, so simple to solve, you know, and it was solved really, really quickly. But the benefit that people get from that is big, right?
I love the fact that it's sort of niggly things as well, and potentially things like you say, that the thing about, oh, I'm not happy, and somebody sort of reassuring and saying, don't worry, it'll get better, or whatever. I can't think of any other way that that would be picked up and dealt with other than just by a chance conversation with the right person.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, you know, one of the things I really enjoy seeing with what we do is when customers say, you know what, that one was solved by the community. You know, we didn't really get involved. It just kind of solved itself because people were there that are willing to help. And especially in really large organizations, that's often the challenge, right? There's often solutions in place and people just don't know where to look, or they haven't heard about it. And I think that kind of real-time communication and doing it in a really transparent way is really key now in the modern world. You know, we don't see each other a lot. That word of mouth kind of conversation by the water cooler doesn't happen as much anymore, you know. So yeah, that's really what we're trying to help solve, you know.
And as you say, it's real time, and in some ways it's not something that gets sort of stuck on a list somewhere on a sort of back burner because it seems too big to deal with, or, you know, there isn't the time. It sort of feels like it's there, it's in real time, and it sort of, it almost incentivizes people to just get on and do it if they're interested in what's going on.
And I think that visibility is really key. So we often describe Trickle as being Marmite. You know, you'll love it or you'll hate it, and you'll love it if you've got a progressive view within your organization. You know, if you're a leader of a team of 1,000 people and you want to progress and, you know, demonstrate that you know really care about improving the environment, and not just the working environment, but, you know, the services you're providing, then you'll enjoy Trickle because it makes it very easy to see what's important, and then you can address things collectively. But if you're in an organization where it's harder to make that change and you're a bit of a lone wolf, then Trickle might not suit that organization so well. And it's about, really what we find is that in organizations like that are maybe kind of older and have got legacy challenges and, you know, maybe some hierarchy and layers that they are not so useful in the world that we now live in. What we find is that if you can introduce this within a, you know, 2 or 3 teams, and we usually recommend a kind of a minimum of 100 people, maybe about 150 people across 2 or 3 teams, then even in those types of organizations, you can start to show that you can make your organization more agile team by team. And that starts to spread throughout the organization, you know.
Yes.
So we don't tend to shy away from the fact that this is very in your face. And it's actually part of the design, right? Because, you know, if you're aware of what's going on, then you have a better chance of delivering a positive outcome. That's my view on it, right? And that's why it works that way.
It must be. Well, I think your Marmite comment is so true, that it's either an easy sell or a hard sell, and there's probably not much in the middle. I've just been reminded of a conversation years ago, and I can't quite remember what it was we were talking about, but there was a whole concern about sort of giving employees an opportunity to say something which would sort of potentially encourage everyone else to feel the same trauma, or you know, it would end up being sort of complaining in public sort of thing, and that was a challenge, and I guess that is a challenge, but that's sort of the point, that's how these things will get resolved if they are you know, raised to the surface. But you've also got to have that sort of culture and openness to allow that to happen, to also then allow the change to happen, whether that be, you know, at a more senior level or as you say, with the community at the time. But it's challenging, isn't it?
it is. But you talk about, you know, you make a really good point there about publicly. So, you know, change days since I was starting off in the workplace, you know, with things like Glassdoor and Twitter or X, as we would call it now, you know, where people can go on and they can openly talk about your organization. And for big organizations, that can be a real challenge, right? Because you have a lot of employees. And when you have a lot of employees who are disgruntled and they talk about things publicly, then, you know, that can affect your reputation. The idea with Trickle is that you have those conversations internally, right? So you have the chance to address them before they go into the public. It's a bit like the old the chef's analogy, you know. It's like, don't let your mistakes go out of the kitchen.
Yes, yeah. So when we were preparing for our chat today, one of the topics that you mentioned was whistleblowing, and how it can be a sensitive topic. What are your thoughts on an environment where whistleblowing is actually positive and can help to make sort of good changes? How can organizations sort of approach that concept? Because it's the sort of thing that probably puts some dread into anyone's sort of mind when they think about
Yeah,
bringing something
and
up, you know,
I
like
think
that.
there's a really important stage before whistleblowing, in my view, which is psychological safety. So I guess a lot of the things we've been talking about today are speaking up and trust, and you know, the phrase psychological safety, which I think probably Google made it much more popular than it ever was when they ran their study about 10 years ago. I think it was now, where the survey of their best performing teams, or sorry, they identified that their best performing teams had the common attribute they had was a sense of psychological safety, right? The ability to speak up without fear of negative consequences. And for me, I think that's an absolutely essential ingredient of a successful workplace, and something that we always try and help our customers to instill using Trickle, you know. So whistleblowing for me is something's gone wrong far before. Right, if you get to the point where you need to whistleblow, because ideally you would have a kind of, not a platform, but a way of working where, number one, people feel comfortable to speak up; number two, they know that things are going to be addressed; and then number three, they know that the outcomes are going to be very transparent, and or as transparent as you can be for the organization type that you are. And I think then that means that you've got a far better chance of addressing things before they snowball to the point where it's a whistleblowing event, you know. And when you do still, obviously, you do still need to have processes in place for things that do escalate to that point. And I think, again, the kind of key to me there, or in my experience, is people feeling that they're safe and that they're supported in doing that, you know. So obviously making sure that it's true anonymity, you know, can you raise this safely, and know that you're going to be not identified for the things that you're suggesting if you don't want to be identified, but also knowing that you can get into direct dialogue with people that you trust within your organization. That's a real, you know, it's a really important thing. And unfortunately, we're seeing, I guess, a greater awareness about whistleblowing because of the, you know, the various different things that have been in the news over the last 6 to 12 months, and not just in healthcare, you know, across all sorts of different organizations, you know.
And I think it goes back to that link to continuous improvement, doesn't it? I went on holiday recently and we were talking about flying, and I was saying how I never worry about flying because I know how focused on continuous improvement the aviation is. You know, there's so much of a focus on think if things go wrong, let's work out why and not do it again next time, sort of thing. And that's not the same in many sectors and many organizations, where it's more about covering it up or not being open and honest because it could commercially impact and everything else. And it's quite a different mindset, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. You're spot on with that comparison to aviation. There's a book called, is it Black Box Thinking? I don't know if you've ever read that book.
I have,
Yeah, that's got some really interesting background to the whole kind of continuous improvement and learning from the past, you know, and being open learning systems as well, you know, and feedback loops.
exactly. Lovely. It's been so interesting talking to you today, Paul. Thank you so much. It's really so important that we encourage sort of improvements in organizations and our employees to have that opportunity to impact and improve communication, but also the actual work that's done. And it sounds like you're really helping with that with Trickle. So thank you so much for today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Joe.
And just to let you know, next week we've got Gerald Leonard, who's founder of the Leonard Productivity Intelligence Institute. He's talking to Joe Moffat about helping organizations create a team of productive employees.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice. for people who believe there's a better way to work.